Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Sleep Discussion. You're on Block Talk Radio. You are listening to Alice Cooper's Go to Hell, and tonight we're going to venture into a little hell by author H.P. Lovecraft, one of the greatest horror writers in our time. We have a lot of great stuff going on tonight here at All Poetry, one of the world's largest poetry groups on the web. And inside that little bit of All Poetry is a wonderful group of poets in a team of voices, which I'm happy to be a part of. Right now, let me introduce you to some of those great poets. Let's everyone say hello to Mr. A.P. Taylor. Hello, Mr. A.P. How are you this evening?
Hello, sweet. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well tonight. Very excited about talking about Mr. Lovecraft. And also, hello to Rafi Tor.
Hello.
Hello. How are you this fine evening, Mr. Rackentor?
I'm getting by. I'm doing good.
Good. And also joining us is the president organizer, the most wonderful person that has ever touched the poetry world and team of voices, Ms. Deborah Lee. How are you, fine mistress?
Man, oh man. I'm quite well, dear heart. How are you?
Mildly good. AP, are you going to read and run? Are you off to rule the world?
No, I'm
going to
stick around for a little while. So you're going to have to put up with me for a little while.
I'm so excited because I'm making the voice of AP Lovecraft, and I'm going to start with one of his fabulous poems, and I'm going to have you read because I was really hoping you'd stick around because you have that voice, and I'm like, I hope AP sticks around because I really want him to read some of, because AP Lovecraft was not only an incredible author that wrote so many great books, but he was also a poet, and he wrote some really great poems. So I am going to throw on the board one of his poems that I would love for you to be the voice of him for me today. And I thought would be great. And I wish Hatter was here because he says this word all the time, you know, his great nemesis. And so this is for Hatter. Unfortunately, he's not here right now, but I'm hoping that maybe he shows up.
He's with us in spirit.
He is. So here you go, Mr. A.T.
Okay. Well, this is a poem that I have just got in front of me, sweet. So this is Nemesis. Nemesis by H.P. Lovecraft, and it goes a little bit like this. Through the ghoul-guarded gateways of slumber, past the wan mooned abysses of night, I have lived all my life without number. I have sounded all things with my sight, and I struggle to speak ere daybreak, deemed into madness with fright. I have whirled with the earth at the dawning, when the sky was a vaporous flame. I have seen the dark universe yawning, where the black planets roll without aim, where they roll in their horror unheeded, without knowledge or luster or name. I had drifted o'er seas without ending, under sinister grey-clouded skies, the many-forked lightnings rending, resound with hysterical cries. The moans of invisible demons that out of the green waters rise. I have plunged like a deer through the arches of the hoary primordial grove, where the oaks feel the presence that marches and stalks on where no spirit dares rove. And I flee from a thing that surrounds me and leers through dead branches above. I have stumbled by cave-ridden mountains that rise barren and bleak from the plain. I have drunk of the fog-fetted mountains, the booze down to the marsh and the main, And in cursed towns I have seen things I care not to gaze on again. I have scanned the vast ivy-clad palace. I have trod its untenanted hall, where the moon writhing up from the valleys shrews the tapestried things on the wall. Strange figures discordantly woven, which I cannot endure to recall. I have peered from the casement in wonder at the mouldering meadows around, the many-roofed village laid under the curse of a grave-girdled ground. And from the rows of white-urned cavern marble, I listen intently for sound. I have haunted the tombs of the ages. I have flown on the pinions of fear, where the smoke-belching Erebus rages, where the jackals loom snow-clad and drear. And in realms where the sun of the desert consumes what it never can cheer. I was old when the pharaohs first mounted the jewel-decked throne by the Nile. I was old in those epochs uncounted, when I and I only was vile. And man, yet untainted and happy, dwelt in bliss on the far Arctic Isle. Oh, great was the sin of my spirit, and great is the reach of its doom. Nor the pity of heaven can cheer it, nor can respite be found in the tomb. Down the infinite eons come beating the wings of unmerciful gloom. Through the ghoul-guarded gateways of slumber, past the wan-mooned abysses of night, I have lived o'er my fear lives without number. I have sounded all things with my sight. And I struggle and shriek ere the daybreak, being driven to madness with fright. End poem.
You kind of blew her away, AP.
Must have.
That was a great read.
Thank you. Look, I got into that. That had a nice rhythm to it. Just sort of get the sort of... I don't know. That just had a beautiful rhythm. Really nice with a really well-written poem. If you find the rhythm of a poem, it just can just bounce along. That one did.
Yeah.
So,
well, I agree. It was an awesome read. And I wonder where my suite went. Shows are still here.
I don't know. He was there. I was here.
I'm not here. I am going on and on about what a great read this is. And I put myself on mute because I'm mute because they were letting the dogs and stuff out. And I'm going, oh, my God, what a wonderful read. What a great line. You really got into it. I was blown away. Oh, God, you just kind of took my breath away between the words that were written and the sound of your voice. You had it dark and deep and painted, and I think just the way it was supposed to be read. I can't not – oh, it was just great. The great sin of my spirit, and it, great is the breach of its doom. Not the pity of heaven can cheer it, nor the respite be found in the tomb. Down the infinite eons come beating the wings of unmerciful gloom. You just wonder if he was that dark of a life or if he just had this great, creative, dark imagination about him. I really just enjoy, the depth of his imagination. You know, we talk about, like, Stephen King and, Peter Straub and Anne Rice. And, he's more of the Poe side of things. And I think he's fabulous. I mean, I know you read it, AP. What was your take on it?
Well, I was just saying the lovely thing about it is that when there's a really beautifully written poem, it has a cadence and rhythm of its own. And even though I hadn't read the poem before, it only took a stanza before I could actually get straight into that rhythm and assonance that the poem had, because it's just beautifully placed on the page. It tells a story, but it does it within exactly the same frame and wording, the whole and the way it's done the whole way through. And so story goes on, the frame of the poem stays the same, and it's just beautifully written.
Well crafted.
And Rex, what are your thoughts on the message of this poem, on what he was trying to kind of say to us? And
well, I mean, you know, he kind of hammered home the point of, you know, he's seen a lot of shit. And that really came through wonderfully in his imagery. I mean, there's no denying when AP was saying, in addition to the cadence, you know, the way he tells the story, it had a beautiful flow to it in the sense of what he went through and the scene that he was setting. He staged it and walked us through it, and he did it with imagery that was just, you know, in words that were so, you know, they weren't archaic. They were completely relatable and maybe a little above everyday speech, but you know, nothing that you had to like go run into the dictionary to try and figure out what he was trying to say, you know, and gorgeous metaphor and you know, the darkness permeated everything too. So it was just lovely. You know, again, you know, the fact that he's got craft in his name is just, you know, apropos. And yeah, he's not Poe, but Poe. You know, I just really, really enjoyed it.
And Beverly, your world of thoughts on this?
Well, I kind of agree with everything that's been said so far. For one thing, yeah, it's always way easier to read when that rhyme and flow and cadence and, well, not always rhyme and flow, but just the cadence makes a difference, because once it pulls you in, it just goes. And I like that comparison that you gave at the beginning, Sweet, to Poe. All throughout it, of course, but like with the last two stanzas, oh, great was the sin of my spirit, and great is the reach of its doom. Not the pity of heaven can cheer it, nor respite be found in the tomb. Down the infinite aeons come beating the wings of unmerciful gloom. Like stuff like unmerciful gloom puts you in mind of Poe for sure. And at the end of the last one, I have sounded all things with my sight, and I struggle and shriek ere the daybreak, being driven to madness with fright. And that madness with fright definitely would make you think of Poe. So he's a brilliant poet, and this is awesome and great read, AP.
Thank you.
All right. Deb, you are on the board.
Oh, back over there.
Pat is on the board. AP is on the board. You're on the board. Oh, wrong board. Sorry.
The board. Okay. The quote that I chose, well, it's the one on the purple background. I'm sure that's really, really helpful, but I'm headed there. Give me a half a second. Okay. The one I went to says, I have seen beyond the bound of infinity and drawn down demons from the stars. I have harnessed the shadows that strive from the world to sow death and madness. Anyway, there was something about beyond the bounds of infinity, and then a photo that I had, and then something I saw in the sky today. So anyway, a poem was born, and it's called Extraterrestrials Hitchhike Under Cloud Cover Camouflage. Here we go. Sky pillows that float on 8 shades of blue travel the horizon line up in eyes full view. With pink and purple-gray colors shining through, striping the sky now marked the cornflower hue. Nimbus strikes stratus clouds in a thundered whack as the shrouds rotate like bumper cars on the track, colliding and then spreading for the cloud stained jet black, saucer-shaped and hovering around the sun and back. So, as spaceships fly neath the cover of clouds, don't look now, Sweet. Earth's under attack. Cloudbursts. Saw the spacecraft up in flight. That lightning is just tractor beams tossing light. And with those flashes of neon and white, levitation transports folks beneath the cloak of night. The probings are televised every stormy night. And boom.
Oh, I love this. this is wonderful. I really enjoyed this. I love the imagery in it with pink and purple gray clouds, and I love the cornflower hues. But I like the fact you warn me that the Earth is under attack. A personal warning to me is wonderful. Cloudbursts are spacecrafts up in flight. And those flashes of neon white vacation transports folks. And I really like your author notes, just FYI. So it's the rain that falls, alien pee dumped on And is that me being captured, or is that someone else? I just want to make sure, because I hope it's not me.
Well, I figured I yelled "sweet" and then "bye," so it was like me.
Okay.
Bye.
I just want to say bye. I was thinking it might be Hatter because it's kind of non-feminine little figure, so I'm going to go with Hatter because he's always the one getting captured.
He must have forgot his
tinfoil hat. Yeah. This is really a great poem. I like the way it went, like bumper cars on track. You always have this great way of making poems kind of move, like they're always in constant, perpetual motion. And like there's flying and there's bumper cars and there's colliding and spreading and hovering. And, you know, and along with your array of colors, you always have this ability to have movement. And that's something I really enjoy about your poems, movement. So I really think that's cool.
Do you see the spaceship in the photo to the right there in central? That's a flying saucer there. So it's just like way cool.
Oh,
by the way, I let
really
Hatter
cool.
in.
Oh, hi, Hatter. You just got taken up under a cloud.
I heard.
Yeah. See, you've just been taken. That's
televising
really cool.
The probing center.
Yes.
You just got taken.
Never hitchhike at night. And never hitchhike at night.
That's amazing. Never hitchhike at night. That's amazing. So, Dragon Tour, what did you think of this great poem?
Yeah, you know, like Mr. Lovecraft before you, you know, you know slouch when it came to the cadence, and I think that goes with what CP was saying about the movement. You know, the imagery is amazing, and you always do it with a story involved. And when you got to the end, you really had me grinning because I wouldn't, you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, the lightning being a tractor beam that kind of had me smiling. But the way that you worded the whole thing, and then you kind of, you know, poke fun at it a little bit with the probing. So, you know, I again, that appealed straight to me, you know, between tractor beams and probing. I'm like, oh, this is absolutely epic. I really enjoyed it, you know. Throwing the color and everything else, it's like, you know, this is destined to be a classic.
Trina, the tractor beams and the probing.
Yeah.
Awesome comment. Thank you, Rick.
And AP.
Well, see, I sort of went back into my early sort of movie lexicon here, and this reminded me very strongly of Close Encounters of the Third Kind and the little boy when the alien spacecraft came down and the lights were on and got a triangle out. And it just spoke to me through that, and even the words, you know, some of the words that were there, like nimbus and saucer and spaceships and cloudbursts and all that stuff. It was, you know, I couldn't get past Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is cool because I really like that film.
Cool comment. Thank you.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
AP was the very first person to write for this subject. So
okay.
I have put the very first poem, P, on the board.
Can I put the second one, sweet? Because the second one sort of fits better with Deb's poem. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I have no problem
with
that. Yeah.
it sort of fits better by theme. So I you know, it's just one of those things, but it you'll see what I mean. Yeah, you'll see what I mean.
Okay.
This was done in the last hour. And so, you know, it is what it is. It is
okay.
Tiny Pitchforks. And it goes
I love the title.
A little bit like this. Bleachers as creatures spied anew in the small mirror you see, leering features in reflection through in his pupils were demoness three, prancing and crashing deep within, each poking him with a fork, teeth gnashing, felt bones, jarred skin, and unable to talk. His demeanour from dreamer did turn while prodding hit so deep, gone the schemer as pain left burned, discomfort oblivious in its sleep. Milled uniforms as Muzak spilled out in the walls of a surgery white, screamed as billed in a financial rout, dentist charge better than my bite. End poem.
Wow. Leeches as creatures spied in you in the small mirror you see. I love that first two lines. Oh, prancing and crashing deep within, each poking him with a fork. Gone the smear as pain left burned, discomfort oblivious in its sweep. How mealed uniforms as music spilled out into walls of surgery white. Screamed as billed in financial rout, dentist charged better than my bite. Oh, you know, I can just feel every single inch of that, every tiny little bite of that. I had the worst thing happen when I had my heart surgery, and that is the pulling of many, many, many teeth. If you don't know that when you have when they give you open heart surgery, they mess with your teeth a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few of my own world of teeth because they took out almost all of my teeth. So I cried more about that than actually having open heart surgery because of that. Yeah, than anything else. They took my smile, I said. But because of the fact of all of that, the pain from having all that done before I had surgery was crazy. And this is so real to me. And I feel those tiny pitchforks. I really thought this was brilliant. A, in its darkness. B, in its truth. And C, because you feel it. You actually can feel that. Because anybody that's ever been to those really milled uniforms with the Muzak, you can just feel it. Jay Hatter, what do you think of the dentist and their teeny pitchforks?
Yeah, I think there's something wrong with the thought of Muzak playing in the OR. I put it, I think that's what nightmare is beginning with that opening scene. You hear Muzak in the background. It was very, very well written. Where's that one part? I heard teeth gnashing, felt bones, dry skin. Yeah, the unable to talk. Those are the nightmares of the OR. When I was in the pain clinic trying to deal with pain, there was a guy who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a rookie. He was in spring training, and I blew his knee out. He woke up during surgery on his knee. Everything that went with it, yeah. That's what it reminded me, unable to talk, because he said it for the couple minutes, probably, which was a lifetime. He wasn't able to say anything, but he felt everything.
Wow.
And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot of brilliance in this. The first thing I want to point out is you just said forks. But, you know, you didn't have to say anything more than that because Sweepy went straight to Pitchfork just like I did. So that's a little subtle detail that, you know, to keep the rhyme and cadence and everything, you know, you're able to do that. And, you know, the urge to put it in there, speaking as someone who would probably have put it in there, is hard to resist. So, you know, that alone, you know, in the opening was just like, you know, I won't say eye-catching because I can't see, but, you know, it was definitely brilliant. And then, you know, as the poem trickled down, you know, some of the thoughts that went in there, you know, you're conveying horror, and there's, you know, certain legends about horror, you know, like the whole looking in the mirror and saying somebody's name three times. So you've got the mirror and the three in the beginning, too, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, it goes down and on, and you know, that they're not speaking. And like Hatta mentioned, too, you have to call attention to that Muzak because, you know, that is horror in itself to a lot of people. Anyone that I think appreciates music is like, you say Muzak to anyone that appreciates music, they kind of cringe because it's like, especially when you start to get older and, you know, my music is now Muzak. It's like, no, they're playing it on the radio in the elevator. No. You know, the different pieces of horror, you know, the way that they affect people. But the overall, you know, story, you know, opening your mouth and not being able to speak even, it's just great horror writing. You did a great job with that.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
And Dab, your thoughts.
Well, for starters, I think this is a very brilliant description of the dental visit, for sure, from that little mirror down to the demeanor. But, like, you had little things like, where did that one go? His demeanor from Dreamer did turn while prodding hit soul deep. And I got, I cringed at the thought. So I see that, you know, the play there, we had probing, now we have prodding, and in all honesty, between the two, I think I'd rather be probed than prodded because I can't stand the dentist. So this drew into that in my mind. And then for a minute there, I was like, Muzak, what the? Because my whole life, it's just been called elevator music. So I had to think about it for a minute to realize what it was, you know. It's not bad enough you're sitting there in the torture chamber. Now you got the elevator music in your ear but there was another thing, too, that got me teeth gnashing, felt bones, jarred skin, was left mute and unable to talk. Like, you're either not going to talk or you're going to do that because you hold on to your bottom lip and then try to talk because you're so swelled up from the shot, the pitchfork that they gave you. I'm just getting all kinds of shivers here from thinking about the damn dentist. Really, really cool share.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Hatter, my darling, you are on the board.
Oh, okay.
You're such
a aliens play music in the Muzak in their ships because they don't want to hassle them with copyright infringement. Okay. Oh my God. It's there? I don't see it.
I'll put it on
yep.
there.
Refresh.
Oh, let me refresh. Okay. Oh, boom. Can't be there.
That's okay. I don't see.
Unable to keep anything to sell. It goes like this. The idea of entering the tomb never left my thoughts. That was the prompt. Silent walking between the stones reminded me I was alone. I believed that I could hear the dead. I could not believe what they said. Hungry from years of chewing things, no lunch was packed before dying. Some had recipes but had no book, others a flame but had no cook. Hunger set in and no coupons to use, the walking dead with the new tennis shoes. In search of things that we're not, that we're more at home finding things that reminds them of home. Unable to keep anything to sell, the drive through they tried didn't work very well. Voices they heard when silence set in, the spot haunted most was in the kitchen. To keep them happy because they're never gone, just remember to stock the gray poupon.
Oh, Hatter. I don't even know how you do the things you do. I don't know how you put it all together. I don't know how you work it. I just know that I love it. I think you're brilliant. I think you have the art of rhyme. I think you have the art of storytelling. I think you took this prop and just twisted it and did your Hatter thing and kind of wrung it out. And I just, you're just a Hatter, the Hatter magic, the Hatter touch is what I always call it. And I think it's just amazing. Funny and dark all at the same time. You like the darkest humor of all. Twisted dark Hatter humor. I love it. And Deb, your thoughts on this twisted darkness?
Deb's talking to the mute.
No, actually, I lost Deb. Had AP, your thoughts on this twisted darkness?
Well, there were two things in particular that I'd sort of never thought of before. First was of dying without packing a lunch. I thought about that. You know, I mean, it's interesting because you're getting bloody hungry, but then you're not.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, you know, I don't know which way to sort of take that. Anyway, I'd never thought about that before. And the second one I hadn't thought about was that it's important to have the mustard there. And I sort of don't know what way to take that either, because if you haven't got the lunch, then you don't need the mustard. And if you have the mustard, you don't have the lunch. And then I just got lost in that.
AP needs a sandwich.
Okay. I think that's what it's telling me.
Well, wouldn't it be great if you went into a mausoleum or a tube scared to death, and if they find out there was a comic team doing their gig in there, it's all for they're funny, man.
There's a buffet complete with
where's
mustard.
My buffet?
No reason. It couldn't be a Laurel and Hardy.
That would be awesome. And Rackentor, your thoughts?
Not as awesome as the poem. This is great, Hatter. I mean, I love questions like that, and the idea of, you know, just putting a thought out there that like, you know, you talk about packing a lunch, but when you go someplace, you usually pack a lunch. So to me, if you want to get philosophical about something like that, it's like, can you really plan for death? You know, you can't take it with you. That the whole idea of, you know, where you're going and trying to, you know, be ready for it, comes into mind on such a simple thought, you know. I mean, yeah, you're saying it very glib and very, you know, lightly, but it's really a deep, deep thought. And you know, yeah, it's almost not fair to put something like that in something so simple. So, you know, bravo. And you know, again, when you get down to the Grey Poupon, you know, now I'm back to Muzak because, you know, to me that's, you know, dates back to the commercial and everything. And you know, some people may not get it, but, you know, it's a shame if they don't, because that's funny. I'm sorry. The whole thing was great. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's all about the unknown. You don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's better than we think.
I know what Grey Poupon is, so.
Just pack a lunch.
Pack your lunch. I like that. All right. So I am going to throw up. Well, not literally, but throw me up.
Please don't.
That's a whole other sick and twisted game. Okay, so this is Valley of Death, which I wrote a while ago, but I think it kind of fits. So here we go. Before the after and after the now, there's a space that exists in the shadows we catch, over a shoulder in the corner of our eye, a feeling, a shiver, the second we feel when we are not alone in an empty home. Dead men do not wander here in the darkness, their screams not heard. Outside the caves, they did not obey. They did not obey the warnings, the doorway of the ancients. Mountains choreographed in shadows of skulls loomed over miles of unyielding lands as empty eye sockets filled with the flame of the sun justified their sinister existence in the daylight. Black blood drains from the dried veins of the dead in the valley of shards of glass and shattered lives, as rivers flow with rotten flesh and crushed bones. This is the valley of death we fear, the fiery breath of the dragon on our necks that make us shiver, the empty skull eyes that watch us when we know we are alone. Death is the shadow that we see in the corner of our eyes, or count the days behind our shoulders. Do not run. Walk slowly, and I shall see you there when we are both done in the poem.
Wow.
What do you think, Rock?
I this is a great example of why I like to follow Sweet Pea around. Not just for the view. Seriously, the way that you draw out the darkness in this, I really appreciate it. The metaphor, the imagery, it's just, and I'm cursing myself that I can't quote some of the pieces, bits and pieces of it, because, you know, you set up a mood with the way that you write in a way that's, you know, innocent, but, you know, poignant at the same time. And I just love the way that you do that. The whole piece is foreboding. You're pulling out the idea of the darkness. I just enjoyed it. I don't know. You kind of leave me a little speechless too, but.
AP, what do you think?
It's interesting, Atticus,
I promise I will get better at writing dark, because it's one of those things I haven't done as much as what Sweet does. But one of the ways that in order for it to be dark, you've actually got to start at a point that's not, if that makes any sense. And so the way that the first stanza is set up, before the after and after the now, there is space that exists in the shadows we catch. It starts with something that's not dark, but it quickly becomes dark, and it only works as a dark poem because it's got contrast. And that first stanza gives it the contrast, and it's really important in the scheme of the poem. And Sweet does a couple of times in the contradiction, particularly in the last stanza, where there's the empty skull eyes that watch us when we know we're alone. In other words, we're alone, but we're not. Yeah, and it's in that sort of contradiction of the words that there's the fear that grows. And so it's just a really, really well observed but very well written poem.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I like the part the dragon on it, that make us shiver, the empty skull eyes that watch us when we know we are alone. Death is the shadow that we see in the corner of our eyes. Shadow people, that's how the only way you can detect them is out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
Maybe shiver.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. But, that's my little Valley of the Death poem. And it kind of fits his, my favorite quote. Duh.
Entering the tomb?
No,
what about entering
it's not.
The tomb?
No, it was, good Lord. It is a mistake to fancy that horror is associated inextricably, I cannot say that word, with darkness, silence, and solitude. I really like that phrase, because we should not just associate horror with darkness, silence, and solitude. It's in the bright of day, you know, daylight, and as we're walking down the street, you never know when horror can be there. And so I really like that quote from him. So that's kind of where that poem came from. So, AP, are you ready to read poem number two? All
of
right.
Course.
Let me bring it down. And there we go.
So, get up. This is In the Moment to See. And it goes a little bit like this. And the ship was long behind, instead now roaring seas. A storm was toying here. We both knew my life trying to seize. As the next breaker crashes and left me reeling below, breath I would seek near while striving against the undertow. Dragging and pulling in bind, currents fierce these. Ghosts startle as peer, their breath ragged while weeds. Peering dull as ashes lost in currents flow, trailing limp, absent fear, while those waves continue to grow. End poem.
Oh, so this, to me, is a very scary, horrific poem, because the thought of drowning is one of my most intimate fears. I think being on a ship out at sea and there's nothing but water. You're not going to go anywhere but into the water. And this absolutely is so detailed. Like my life trying to seize, striving against the undertow, ragged while weaves. I just go startled to peer their breath, ragged while weaves. I mean, you're just lost in currents flow while those waves continue to grow. There's nothing you can do. You're just in the water. I can't even fathom a thought like that. It literally just sends like shivers down my body. Can you imagine? This is what will happen. So I think, to be honest with you, it's probably one of the darkest poems I've read from you, because it's got such a realistic pull to it, and it's so vivid, and it's the description of someone drowning, and they're lost, and they're basically saying, you know, I don't know what to do. This is happening to me. And I think it's brilliantly done. That's all I can say. Rack and Tori, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, just like Sweepy mentioned about drowning, that's a particularly horrible idea to a lot of us, because it encompasses more than one thought about the end to me. You know, it's not just, you know, the inability to breathe. It's, you know, the nakedness of everything around you at the same time, the emptiness, the desolation, you know, it's all encompassed in there. And all the lovely metaphors that kind of go with that, you know, the undertow is a great, you know, pull. You really embrace the idea of you know, being in the water and just, you know, going to your end. You know, there's something about that, you know. Just you know, the initial thought of being lost at sea, even, you know, land could be like, you know, just over the horizon, but you'd never know it. And if you choose the wrong way to go, you'll never find it. And, you know, there's all the hazards in the water to begin with, and not just the drowning. So there's a lot of turmoil and anxiety that comes with the idea of, you know, eventually your muscles are going to give out and you're going to drown. You know, even if you're safe or you think you're safe and you're floating there, you know, the perils of the water to begin with will get you. You know, that there's and you didn't pack a lunch, so you know, it's like, you know, like Sweet mentioned, it's dark, you know, and I would almost say, you know, it's not something that you had to kind of go through to pull a lot of those ideas out, because they I think, you know, if you just mention that word to anybody, they're going to go across, you know, the undertow and the surf and things like that, and end up in the same place at the bottom of the ocean. So well done.
Thanks, Rex. Thank you.
Absolutely. And Hada, your thoughts?
Yeah. Has anybody seen the exploration that we supposedly send two drones out in space, and years later it comes across a planet that it starts to discover? And in it is an alien life form, an alien world that these scientists would say is very probable. We could have ended up that way, but has anybody seen it? I think Einstein and Newton are the two drones. What it is, they find the whales swim in the sky through the clouds because of the atmosphere pressure is different. To hit the bottom was where the bottom cleaners were. Has anybody seen it? It's a.
No, I haven't seen it. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's a fascinating. I will show you that. I think it's a alien planet. It could be just alien planet, and it's just a computerized version of if we were to discover a planet, a livable planet, and what we would find on it, and how each one of them, the creatures or the living things, would work. It's fascinating. This is what this is reminding me of.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, if I find it, I'll post it on there.
Yeah,
it shows that it describes what predators are and how they survived and what they fed on, and it was made up by it was made from these scientists, these actual space scientists that said that, you know, these are all probable. Didn't happen here,
yeah.
But. I can go look. I think I know. That was cool, though.
Very cool.
Cool. Good, right. Let me find it. So, Sweet Pea, is this the beginning of a series? Is this the beginning of a series?
Yes. Through Halloween.
Okay.
Until Halloween. So, next week,
okay.
I will be doing Poe and Hitchcock. And then the following week, I'm going to do Ant. Yeah. And then the following week, I think I'm going to do, every Tuesday.
What day of the week does Halloween land on?
I don't know.
Halloween's Monday. It's a Monday.
Halloween is on a Monday. So. It's a Monday.
I think so.
So anyway, I'm going to play something from Frank.
Yes.
It is on the board. So here we go.
I was sick unto death with that long agony. And when they at length unbound me, and I was permitted to sit, I felt that my senses were leaving me. The sentence, the dread sentence of death, was a laugh of distinct accentuation which reached my ears. Death had never escaped my thoughts before, but I never predicted its lingering hour of arrival, for it had always been a haunted nightmare that had eluded my comprehension. Its tenebrous appearance in disguise had lurked as an unwelcome shuttle within the perilous punition that had succumbed me to my condemnation. If you must know the cause of my confinement to these ancient walls, is not my brass accountability, or my literary patronage revoked. Instead, due to the fact of my noble lineage, an appellation bestowed, to which I was doomed, to the terrible pit and the pendulum of my despair, bound to the heavy manacles of a Stygian devil's dungeon of oppression, a miserable prisoner of the madness of the Spanish Inquisition unleashed, abandoned behind the rusty arch to the chamber of horror of my fate. I hear the obstreperous echoes of the tortured voices of screaming souls. Soon, the medieval door opens and a stranger dressed in black led me to my death. But awaiting me is the carnifex of the sharp blade of the swaying pendulum, and I am struck to the solid marble table of the dripping blood amassed. So I stare at the pendulum, gradually lowering by the passing minute. Trepidation sent a deep and rapid chill shivering down my fragile spine. My body begins to tense in a stiff, immovable rigidity of execution. I can hear the whistling motion of the silver blade reaching my ear. I can feel then the carnivorous blade piercing my skin and flesh. My eyes bulge and increase in fear. I listen closely to the blade. No! No! My eyes bulge in increasing fear as I listen closely to the blade. No! No!
It's over.
No, no. I'm muted.
Yeah, it must be a video.
Sorry, here I go. Yeah, that was a pretty amazing story, Frank. Wow, the storytelling and the read was incredible. The imagery was brilliant. Wow. Sometimes when you read, I kind of get lost in that story and forget that I'm listening to a poet. It just gets so, you get so wrapped up in what you're saying. And the sound of your voice kind of just captures everything. I love the very first line. It's like, death has never escaped my thoughts before. And, you know, there's some other great lines in here. Soon the medieval door opens and a stranger dressed in black led me to my death. And, you know, at the end, my eyes bulge in increasing fear as I listen closely to the blade. I love as I listen closely to the blade. It was kind of, you know, very, hair on the back of your neck kind of stand-up poetry. Rocking Tour, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of like Welcome to the End. You know, you did a great job leading us through it. It's not so much that it's the inevitability of it. It's standing outside yourself and watching it take place. And, you know, your voice in the production of what you do, you know, adds to that and heightens the level of it. It's really well done.
Absolutely. And Hatter, your thoughts on this?
I got to ask the question, the line that wasn't spoken. French army had entered Toledo. The Inquisition was in the hands of its enemies. Reminded me of A Day in the Life by the Beatles, where the English army had just won the war. I was waiting for the, some kind of tie-in, so I don't know. Yeah, Frank, just one suggestion. You got to get a little more volume. I'm sitting here trying to jack my volume up to hear you.
Blame Sleepy, not Frank.
I had it all the way up.
Oh, stop. I'm kidding. God.
Because I thought the same thing. It was a little quiet, so I turned it all the way up. So don't blame me. I did my job as a host.
I apologize, sweet teasing.
That's okay. And AP, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Frank's a brilliant descriptive writer, and he talks about being a sort of a Victorian type of poet, and that sort of equates to having a really wide usage of words and having those words without actually having any of the sound effects and his voice create an image of fear and obviously here we're talking about the Inquisition and God knows that was fearful enough. But then you put on top of that the way that he describes it and the way he uses his voice, and then he puts the sound effects on it as well, and it's incredibly effective as a piece.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Okay, AP, I'm going to have you read the last poem of the night, which is as we go into October, as we head into October, the theme of October, and this is also written by H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay. So this is Halloween in a Suburb by H.P. Lovecraft, and it goes a little bit like this. The steeples are white in the moonlight, and the trees have a silver glare. Past the chimneys high, see the vampires fly, and the harpies of upper air that flutter and laugh and stare. Till the village dead, the moon outspread, never shone, and the sunsets gleam, but grew out of the deep, the dead years keep. Where the rivers of madness stream down the gulfs to a pit of dream. A chill wind weaves through the rows of sheaves in the meadows the chimmer pale and comes to twine where the headstones shine and the ghouls of the churchyard wail for harvests that fly and fail. Not a breath of the strange great cods of change that tore from the past its own and quicken this hour when a spectral power spreads sleep o'er the cosmic throne and looses the vast unknown. So here again stretch the vale and plain that moon's long forgotten saw, and the dead leap gay and the pallid ray sprung out of the tomb's black moor to shake all the world with awe. And all that the moon shall greet forlorn, the ugliness and the pest, of rows where thick rise the stones and brick, shall some day be with the rest, and brood with the shades unblessed. Then wild in the dark let the lemurs bark, and the leprous spires ascend, the new and old alike in the fold, of horror and death a pen, for the hounds of time to rend. End poem.
Beautiful. Oh, what a wonderful description of Halloween. I really love this. I really love the last stanza. And then wild in the dark, let the lemurs bark and let the spars ascend. For new and old alike in the fold of horror and death are penned. For the hounds of time to rend. So pretty much let all the ghosts and everyone come out. For everything is Halloween. Oh, where rivers of madness stream down the gulfs of to pit of dream. He has these brilliant lines in here, and I've really fallen in love with H.P. Lovecraft. I have to say that before I did anything about this show, I did not know a great deal about him. I had heard of him. I knew some of his things. I knew a couple of his books and a movie, but I really did not know he was a poet. I did not know the vast amount of his work. And I've got to tell you, I totally am in awe of this man, totally fell in love with his genre and the things that he did. Just by these great little words in his poems and the way he structured things. And the way he talks about things. He has a little bit of that horror humor to him. He also has a very dark side of humor, a dark side of diving into your, the inner, I guess, fear of what we think of fear in that dark, unyielding way. Like, we don't know that we're afraid of it, but he brings this out and says, you really are afraid of this. And I didn't know it until he told me. So I like that aspect of him. So, AP, you read it. Your thoughts on this?
Well, it's an interesting poem, Sweet, because it basically goes and it's a six line stanza, effect where the second lot of two and the third lot of two rhyme. But it was interesting because I kept on trying to get the right sort of cadence about the last line because it kept on feeling as if the poem should finish at the end of stanza five. So I was just trying to get the right sort of feel for it. And it to me, it was almost like the last line was a refrain to the rest of the poem, the rest of that stanza, and that's how I ended up reading it. But it's beautifully worded. And beautifully rhymed, and has a beautiful feel, very dark feel to it.
Absolutely. And Rocky Shore, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the first time I heard him mentioned, I was watching, it was a comedian, and the guy's name was Ian Carmel, and he was talking about a sandwich called the Juicy Lucy, and he's like, he's going to describe it in the style of H.P. Lovecraft. And after he did, I felt like, you know, I need to know more about this guy because of, you know, the language that I should know who he is. The way he said it, it was like, you know, well, everybody knows who this guy is. Listening to his work, like you say, especially after I heard the guy, you know, talking about, you know, it was corny, it was a sandwich that he was talking about, but in this style, there's a sense of, I can't pluralize grandiose, but there's a grand, you know, the way he describes things, his lexicon has a sense of you know, grandiosity to it that just, you know, he uses words like maw, you know, that's not just a mouth, it's a maw, you know, it's a different word, and it gives there's a feeling that comes with that, and it fits with the rest of the way he speaks in such a way that, you know, like you say, you know, he's a horror writer, and when he creates an image using words like that, it actually, you know, kind of jumps off the page almost like it's in 3D as opposed to, you know, the flatness of some, you know, text, and it's really quite striking, his descriptiveness and the use of language, and like AP mentioned, you know, I noticed it from the beginning. I was trying to catch the not so much the cadence, but the rhyme scheme, because the AB, you know, the beginning part was obvious. It was the inner line rhyme in the last line that kind of made it stick out to me too. So that there were, I guess, six rhymes in the whole thing, but, you know, it was like the pattern to it felt a little odd that, that you know, in reading it, it was almost like a punctuation to me. But, you know, it still flowed lovely. And I just thought it was a fantastic piece and a beautiful example of his writing.
Awesome. And Hatter, your thoughts on this amazing poem by an amazing poet?
He was a poet, too. I did not know that. I used to read his short stories. Was there suburbs? When did this guy live? When did they name suburbs the suburbs?
I don't know. But
I mean,
that's what it is.
Is that a Roman word? I think, Jesus. How we met the pattern, the structure of it was a little odd, and I tell you why. It fit, but like AP said, he would needed to know that ahead of time before he read it, only because he would have introduced that last line better, for lack of a better word. He repeats. He's got the rhyme in there. He's got the rhyme to the line alternately above it, but he also gives an extra rhyme line to it.
Yeah, it's almost like a hanging vine header.
Yeah, and I think he would have to be very well you need to know very important what each one of those last lines are, and I think it would be very important. I think you could throw it off a little bit if you didn't. If you took just the last lines, I can't do all of them. Down the gulch to the pit of dream, for harvests that fly and fail, and loses the vast unknown to shake all the world with awe. I wonder if there's a pattern. Is there a word for that? You know, you got your palindromes and your backwards.
Mm.
Because once I figured that out, when you were reading it, about the same time you did, I guess, it really fits.
Mm.
It's a good...
Yeah, great.
Yeah, a little different.
Thank you, sweetie.
I got to tell you that I did not know that he was a poet either until I started reading about him. I dropped the other poem for you to read, Hatter, when you want to. It was Nemesis. We read it earlier in the show, and it's a really great poem. I think you'd like it. So whenever you want to read it, that it's up there for you. The next show is Mr.
Yes.
Yeah, Lovecraft. Yeah, it's a great, great poem by him. Raconteur, your show is on the 29th, which is Thursday. So why don't you give me a rundown on that?
It's kind of a simple idea, like I try to do, that you could take in, 4,000 directions. It was just simply signs of life. To me, it kind of strikes me sometimes, there's a combination of when people, try and hide how they really feel, but at the same time, when you're talking to somebody that's obviously talking about something that they enjoy, it comes out in what they're saying. So it's more that than anything, because to me that's like you could hear the smile in their voice when they talk about something that they enjoy or something that really brings them pleasure or that they know a great deal about. So that idea of expressing yourself without even realizing that you're doing it was the thought behind Signs of Life. What is it that really makes you feel alive, and the way that kind of comes out in the way that you express yourself, or if you're writing in your writing, or everyday conversation sometimes even.
Excellent. And then the following day on the 30th is Stephen and Hatter in the man cave. So what's going on there, Hatter?
We just to sort of wind up the week. We sometimes take a song and dissect it, depending on what's happening around us. Play some music. Hang in the man cave. Just give us a call. Hang with us.
Awesome. And then Saturday night, what's going on, AP?
We're on chocolate.
next week. We're on chocolate. Ooh. Will with it.
Yeah.
Rape it, eat, you know, freeze it, you know, do whatever you like. But chocolate is what we're at.
Freeze it. Do whatever you like with it. What can I do with chocolate? All right, so I think that's pretty much our week, and then we start all over on Monday. So there we go. We've got happiness. We've got whatever happens, playing some music with Hatter and Steven in the man cave, and then rubbing ourselves with chocolate or whatever we want to do with chocolate. All right, that sounds like a fun rest of the week, everybody. What, Hatter?
The suburbs were created in the 14th century.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. The suburbs have always been there.
Not by H. He didn't create them.
Suburbanite. Cool.
Well, who would have thought? I want to thank you guys, AP and Hatter and Dev and Rock and Score, for hanging out with me. I really appreciate it. Next week's show is going to be horror writers, and we're going to talk about Poe and Hitchcock. And we may throw Shelley and let's see, Brom in there. Brom Stoker. I'm not quite sure yet, but I think that might be the four we go in there. After some of our older horror writers. But
horror writers?
Looking forward to doing horror writers.
Oh, horror. Monsters.
Horror.
Okay.
Scary. Not horror writers.
Horror writers.
Not horror writers.
Horror, not horror writers. Horror, not horror.
Horror, writers.
Yes. I'm not sure if I'm going to do all four, if I'm just going to stick to Poe and Hitchcock. I think the four might be a little much. So we will probably just stick to Poe and Hitchcock next week. So let's look forward to looking at some of their quotes I pull up for them, or whatever you want to write about them. You know, I just use my quotes as inspiration, but you're more than welcome to, as always, pick your own and write what you'd like about the two of them. So thank you guys very much. Hope everybody has a wonderful night. And I can't, once again, thank you guys enough for being here with me. Have a good night, you guys.
Good night, sweet. Night, Hatter.
See you later.
Good night.
Night, OP.
Yeah,
see you later. Bye.
If you're using Blog Talk, goodbye.